Welcome to this week's edition of the NinersNation.com Better Rivals podcast. My name is Oscar.
My name is David.
And this week, we're coming at you with the third of four Scheme Month episodes. We've covered all manner of defensive 101 and not 101, and now we switch to the offense, and we go to the underappreciated part of the offense, and that's going to be the offensive line. But first, let's get to what few stories we have in the rundown here for the 49ers. And first one, I mean, if no other story, David, gives you championship hopes this early in the season, it's the fact that Camp Hoyer has officially concluded. You've got Brian Hoyer bringing some skill position players, all the quarterbacks, the tight ends, and one running back, just one, out to Dallas to practice a la Alex Smith in 2011. What did we know about that season? NFC Championship. So, thus, logic would tell me that the 49ers are going to have an NFC Championship season this year as well. Brand new coach. The only thing missing is a lockout.
That's the only possible thing you can take away from Camp Hoyer. I don't really know what else there is to say. NFC Championship, probably going to lose in heartbreaking fashion again, because that's how it works. I mean, that's logic. Yeah.
I mean, you've got superstars like Victor Bolden Jr., Kendrick Bourne.
Don't make me spit out this perfectly good beer, okay?
Actually, I was looking up some Victor Bolden Jr. stuff because he's, you know, I thought he might be a good kicker returner. But, I mean, DeAndre Carter, Marquise Goodwin, Jeremy Curley, DeAndre Smelter, Trent Taylor. This is a who's who of camp bodies in Dallas.
Trent Taylor, man, he's Hall of Fame, right, already.
He is. He's Tiny Hands Trent Taylor.
Or at the very least, the White Receiver Hall of Fame. So, I mean, yeah, which is exactly. Almost as good, I hear.
And then you've got Cole Hikutini, George Kittle, Vance McDonald, all out there in Dallas. I mean, look, it's good that they're out there and they're getting reps in because they need it. And at the very least, you've got a kind of cut-rate quarterback who's able to help create a we-work-hard identity. But beyond that, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't like a terribly uncommon thing, you know. Players go during the off time and continue to work out. You see, I mean, we've heard stories all off season about Solomon Thomas and DeForest Buckner and Eric Armstead going and working out together with various people. And they were in, Hawaii with Michael Bennett and a bunch of other guys recently. Like, players go and continue to work out and continue to practice their craft. That's just how it works. Like, there's nothing to take away from this. Brian Hoyer isn't suddenly going to become a better quarterback because he organized this camp. Like, that's
you're dashing dreams. You're dashing dreams like I dashed your dreams earlier this week. Probably my favorite text message of the week was David texting me some stats. Who's the USC quarterback that you're like all hot to trot the draft?
Yeah, so, well, PFF Draft Pass came out, and so I was kind of flipping through some of the quarterbacks and stuff on there, and Sam Darnold, who's the USC quarterback right now, is currently the number one quarterback on the PFF draft board there. So I think I sent you, like, a screenshot of his page in the draft guide and was like, I'm so excited to get my hopes up about drafting Sam Darnold right now.
Yeah, and my response was, yeah, you're going to be really happy when we win that bullshit game against Jacksonville in a week, like 16, and end up getting just out of Darnold reach.
And then I saw that the Rams were right after that, and I was like, fucking goddamn it. they're going to go on like a 2-game win streak and just totally ruin their core. They're never going to find a quarterback because they're going to win two worthless games at the end of the season.
Exactly. But the only other news story, really, which I thought was kind of interesting, was that D'Angelo Williams was asked if there were some teams that he wouldn't play for. He listed four teams. David, did you see this story in the old Niners zeitgeist?
Well, I saw one team, but I didn't realize that there. I didn't see, like, I saw mostly headline stuff. So I saw that the Cowboys were one of those teams because he grew up a 49ers fan, but I did not realize that there were three additional teams here.
Yeah, guess the other three.
Oh, man. Is there any pattern at all? Okay, so if we go with the 49ers thing, so let's go the Packers.
No, the 49ers are the only outlier. That's like his one fan move. Oh. Everything else wasn't a fan move.
Oh, man. Okay, the Rams?
No, they're not, but you're on the right track.
Jacksonville?
Yep.
The Jets?
Nope. Think worse.
Worse than the Jets?
the Cleveland Browns.
Okay, the Browns.
And then Carolina, just because he had a messy divorce with them when he left.
Okay, that makes sense. I would have not gotten to them.
But I love that he's like, yeah, these two teams are too shitty to play for. Didn't like that team because we divorced ugly and I'm a Niners fan. So anyone else open for business?
I am available to be employed by 28 NFL teams, which seems good enough for me.
That's right. That's right. Oh, man. Well, that's about the rundown. So let's get into Scheme Month Episode 3. We covered defense first two episodes, and now we're going to hit the offense hard, and we're going to talk about an under, I think, represented part of the offense, and that's going to be the offensive line. We're going to talk about offensive line 101 this week. We're going to talk about some run blocking schemes in general. We're going to keep it high level, and then we're going to get to pass blocking schemes, which, again, high level, but hopefully it will give you an introduction into what to look for. And then, of course, as always, we're going to wrap up with how this matters for the 49ers as they transition to a new coaching staff and a hell of a roster turnover. But before we get into that, let's talk a little bit about Scheme Month and a little bit about the terminology that we're going to use and that we've been using really for a couple of weeks. Terminology can really change significantly from Team A to Team B to Team C. They're going to call one thing, one run scheme one thing, and then they're going to call it something else in another team. We're going to try and use the most generic language as possible. But you're probably, if you do some research, we're going to link to some articles in the Niners Nation write-up as well. You will see different names for some of the concepts we're talking about. You will hear different terminology. It's not like a port and starboard, which has been with the nautical theme has maintained throughout the last couple of Scheme Month episodes. But so rest assured, we're trying to do our best to use the general terminology, but you will see some different terms. So don't be alarmed. It's not the end of the world. That's just the way that football works because every coach likes to put their spin on stuff.
Yeah, I think that's kind of an important thing to keep in mind. Like whenever you're reading any sort of, football article or podcast or anything like that, where you're trying to get into more scheme and X's and O's, like you always got to keep in mind that like what things are called isn't universal. You know, there's something, I think we've talked about this before, with smash, right? Like, so smash can be the passing concept itself. It can be either of the two routes involved primarily in that concept. So you go from one place to another and you can see them called different things, but you know, it's the information, at least in a very general sense, you know, cause you can get in the same thing as far as technique, like technique on zone runs is, you know, seemingly infinite and each coach is going to have, their own little spin on it. May tweak assignments here and there and that stuff, I think in the big picture, you know, for trying to just enjoy the game a little bit more at home, doesn't really matter. So, you know, the base of these concepts, I think, is really important. That's the stuff to take away. Know that the terminology, the specific techniques can maybe be tweaked here and there.
So let's start with a quick terminology refresher. Then we talk a lot about play side and backside, and we're going to talk a lot about that in this episode as well. The play side is the direction the run is going. And the backside is, well, the opposite side. If you remember the call to action last week, it was that booty, and that's why. Because there is a backside. It is the opposite side to the play side. And then you've got a center that can be either play side or a backside lineman, depending on the direction he's working to. This is going to become important when we start talking about runs like duo and stuff like that. But if they're working to the play side, they're working towards the direction the play is going. And if they're working backside, then they're working away from the play direction.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty straightforward thing, but it's important to know because a lot of times, especially in this, when we're not talking about a specific play, you know, referring to left guard and right guard isn't going to do a lot of good. So it's really talking about the play side guard, the guard on the side the run's going to versus the backside guard, right? The one that's away from that direction. So that's going to be just kind of a big thing to really help you understand a lot of the other stuff we're going to be talking about.
So let's start then with, of course, what Kyle Shanahan is more than likely starting with in his offensive install, and that is the zone running scheme. We've talked a fair bit about the zone running scheme a couple of episodes now over the course of the last 2 years, mostly because we were, you know, primarily one type of scheme under Jim Harbaugh, and then we moved to more of a mixture, and then Chip Kelly came, and it was like, inside zone. So, you know, if you listen to any of the old episodes, you've got a good foundation. But really, the zone blocking scheme was something that started in the 60s with Bill Yeoman at Houston. And then eventually Howard Mudd brought it to the Browns in the mid-80s. And then Jim McNally brings it to the Bengals with Icky Woods. And that's where Alex Gibbs, basically the godfather of the outside zone, sees it and decides, you know what? I kind of like that. I want that. He implements that play. That's a direct quote from Alex Gibbs, actually. Alex Gibbs implements the play in full force with San Diego. In 1990, the Chargers finished with 2,248 yards, second only to the Bills and Thurman Thomas. And basically, that's where Gibbs was like, you know what? I want this to be the centerpiece of an offense. And he went to a couple other jobs, a couple other teams, and they did not want to make the system the feature play. So finally, he goes to Denver with Shanahan, and Shanahan's like, yes, let's do this. They marry the zone blocking scheme and the wide zone with the West Coast offense, and voila, you've got Super Bowls in Denver. You've got Kyle Shanahan, who I think was born in an immaculate conception of this happening. It's just like a virgin birth.
Yeah, his father is actually, it's not Mike Shanahan, it's the West Coast offense. His mother is his own blocking scheme.
That's exactly
right.
Don't
look too much into it.
Yeah, that's two of the Holy Trinity. I'm not sure what the third one is. and here we are today. You've got Kyle Shanahan in, you know, an immaculate conception of the West Coast offense and the zone blocking scheme, and here we go.
Oh, man. So I think there are a couple of things that we want to do with each of these concepts, right? So we're going to talk about zone. We're going to talk about gap schemes. We're going to talk about man schemes. And really what we want to focus on is kind of what are these types of schemes generally trying to accomplish? And then also, what are some key things that you can really look for to help identify which scheme? So when you're watching games on Sunday, right, a couple of things that you can look at that's going to help you identify which bucket, you know, that run play falls into, essentially. So when you're talking about zone runs, really the big thing in terms of what they're trying to accomplish is that they're moving to their play side gap. They want to control that play side gap. So if the run's going to the right side of the offense, everybody's moving to the right side and looking to control that space, right? The space between the offensive linemen, right, are going to be your gaps. That's the area that they want to really control. And while they're doing that, they want to look to create double teams, you know, whenever possible. So we know generally that not every single offensive lineman is going to be directly covered. So those free linemen are going to look to try to create some double teams, help their buddy out whenever possible, whenever that works out, before they go up to the linebacker to really get to their assignment. So that's the big thing that they're trying to get accomplished here in zone runs.
So how do you identify it when you're watching it on Sunday and you're like, oh, that's a zone run, or oh, that's not a zone run? The first thing you want to look for is the first step of the offensive line. In that first step on a true zone run, especially on the outside zone, everyone is going to move in the same direction and take that first step towards the same direction right away. You can take a look at their first step, and as soon as their toe comes off the ground, if everyone's, you know, right foot's going to the right, it's probably a wide zone to the right. Everyone's foot's going to the left, then it's probably going to be a wide zone to the left. That's how it's pretty easy to identify whether or not it's a zone run or not, just simply based on the first step. And there are definitely variants where this won't be true, but the vast majority of zone runs will feature all blockers on the line of scrimmage stepping to the play side with their first step. And so rather than talk about like the key exceptions, that's going to be the rule is play side, step, that's where they're going to want to go. And then the blockers are going to work to the play side linebackers on combo blocks. Remember that combo blocks is where you're helping your buddy out. So you attack, you get a double team at the point of attack. And then one of those guys runs up to the linebacker and then gets basically the second block in that combo block and peels off to get up to the second level.
Yeah, and they're going to kind of wait, right, and see where that linebacker goes, and the one that's in the best position is going to work off, right? So that's kind of, you stay on that block on the down lineman as long as possible. Once the linebacker really commits and chooses which side he's going to go to, that lineman will kind of pick off there and pick him up. So, you know,
what's the quote? It's when you can smell the linebacker's breath. Isn't that what he says? Like that's when to peel off.
Offensive linemen, I'm sure, have come up with just a number of hilarious ways to describe like when they want things to happen. So yeah, that wouldn't surprise me at all. Like I know Chip Kelly was basically, you know, it's linebacker depth. So you're trying to push that that the defensive lineman, the guy that's right on the line of scrimmage, you're trying to push him back. And as soon as you get to the point where you're, you know, effectively even with the linebacker or really close to it, that's when you want to peel off. You don't want to come off too soon because that causes a lot of different problems. You know, you're not as a blocker, as an offensive lineman, you're not as athletic as these linebackers. So if all of a sudden you're in space trying to pick him up, like that's bad news for you. That's also going to, you know, make things a lot tougher for your buddy that's trying to handle that down lineman. You know, it can end up to that block getting blown. So you can run into a lot of problems if you come off those blocks too soon. So that's really kind of, you know, one of the big things. But yeah, you mentioned it. I mean, first step is really the key thing to identifying it. And the two main things, I mean, it really comes down to its outside zone and inside zone, right? Or kind of the two examples. And if you've listened to, I think, one of the two or three super in-depth, you know, zone podcasts that we've done in the past, you know, it's really just the assignments are the same between the two. It's really just a matter of technique that comes in is the difference. So with outside zone, you know, it's a more lateral movement for the offensive line. It's a wider aiming point for the running back. Whereas with inside zone, you know, that step's not going to be quite as big. They're looking to move things more vertically, and it's a kind of more tighter inside hitting play for the running back. So that's going to be, you know, kind of your two main examples there of this type of blocking scheme. But they function very, very similar. Again, it's just that technique and that kind of aiming point that really changes.
There's a couple of like little nuggets of information, I think, about the outside and inside zones, some of which are just going to be about scheme, some of which are going to be about how the 49ers ran it and how the rest of the league ran it, and specifically how often Kyle Shanahan ran it. One is, and we've talked about this before, but the running back's responsibility, or how the running back is going to read the run when they're running out to that D gap on the play side, is you're going to hear bounce, bang, bend a lot. And basically you're going to bounce it. You're going to, you know, bang it right to the target, or you're going to bend it back to the cutback. And Alex Gibbs, who's the guy who basically made this, you know, this scheme famous with Denver, he said if the runner, the running back, does not make the decision on the third step, literally the third step he takes, you've got the wrong running back for this offense. And so just keep that in mind when we start talking about the transition points and what this means for how the current set of players are going to fit.
And I think the emphasis there too is make the decision on the third step. So
yeah, and then live with it.
So I mean, like, so don't expect the runner to actually cut on the third step.
Yeah.
The runner internally needs to make his decision as to what he's going to do, but it's probably going to take another couple steps for him to either set up the block or, you know, actually act on that. But it's really just by that third step, the runner should know what he's doing. And then, you know, it's going to take by step four or five before he actually executes that.
And Gibbs says that you want to make that decision and then live with it. And you don't want to make the decision and then go, oh crap, and then try and, you know, kind of bang it when you decided that you were going to, you know, bounce it. You want to live with whatever decision you make. And so that's the consistent theme. It's like you're going to run it over and over and over again. And Gibbs is pretty much of the mind that you only really run this play and that's it. And you run this play over and over and over again. Shanahan doesn't really have that same mentality. He's going to mix up his schemes a bit. But the inside zone should be the one that 49ers fans are most familiar with, because that's pretty much most of what we did last year.
Yeah, I mean, they went heavy. The 49ers were the team that ran inside zone the most by far last year. Like, it was by a very significant percentage. I want to say that it was in, actually, if I stall here long enough, I can pull up the exact percentage. So, yeah, it was about, it was just over 70%. So, like, 71 and some change percentage there that they ran inside zone. And that's, again, an incredibly high percentage. That was what they did. You know, everything they kind of did was based on that. You know, that was really the foundation of Chip's offense. And it's a different type of skill set. And we'll get into some of the transition points between the two and what the 49ers offensive line is going to have to do a little bit later. But, you know, inside zone to outside zone and kind of switching the emphasis there isn't the easiest thing, because it's a different kind of skill set that you need from your offensive lineman to really execute those at a high level, I think.
So as a point of comparison, last year, the Falcons offense ran 79% of all of their runs as a zone run. There was 48.4% outside zone and 30.6% inside zone. So it will be a pretty significant flip to an emphasis to the outside zone, which is something that will be new for the 49ers offensive line.
Yeah, outside zone for the Niners last year, just as a comparison there as well, 10.6%. So wasn't a large part of the offense. And I watched a lot of those snaps as well, and they weren't really, they did a lot of different things from an adjustment standpoint that is going to make that different than what they're going to be doing this year.
So the next type of run scheme that we're going to talk about is the gap running scheme. And this, the gap running scheme is really all about overwhelming force at the point of attack. The gap scheme is almost as old as football itself. You've got versions of this play popping up as far back as a Michigan playbook in 1905, which this coach's name, this Michigan coach's name is fielding. No, not even that. It's Fielding Yost. Fielding
sure.
Yost.
That's a real that's name.
Fielding Yost. That's his, the Michigan coach. I'm sure that, you know, someone who loves Michigan is probably going to listen to this and be like, yep, that's my dude. Fielding Yost. 1905. You know, I think that's, you know, that's got to be up there coming back in the boomerang of kids' names. That's what I'm thinking.
That's yep. Like, that's not a real name.
But it, yeah, Fielding as a football coach, though, you've got to think that's got like, that's just awesome.
I mean, okay. That's like, that's fair.
That's like the guy who makes Tito's vodka. His last name is Beverage. You know, he makes vodka and his last name is Beverage. I mean, come on. You can't make that shit up. You can't. So, David, what the hell is a gap scheme trying to accomplish?
So there's a really a couple things, right? So, again, looking at our play side and back side, and that's really where we're going to differentiate things here. So on the play side, your blockers are looking to kind of block down, meaning they're blocking back to their inside. So if the run's going to the right, your offensive linemen that are on the right side of the offensive line are actually blocking back to the left. They're trying to crash everything down and really seal off the backside of the defense and create kind of a wall. And then you have a couple of your, usually two, I mean, not always in some single back formations and stuff like that. It may only be one guy, but kind of traditionally it's two guys from the backside that are pulling around and kind of going around that wall that was created by the play side lineman and looking to kind of handle the remaining blockers that are there on the play side. So it allows you to, it's really the reason it's called a gap scheme is because you're creating new gaps. Essentially, you're removing gaps from the backside of the play and you're adding them to the play side by moving those linemen around there. So it's really about, yeah, movement and creating kind of this big, you know, you want your big mauling offensive lineman in this scheme to really be able to kind of pile things up on that backside.
Now, the key thing here, and David mentioned it, is that you're creating gaps and you're moving them really from one side of the offense to the other. We talked during our defensive scheme month podcast about how gap integrity is super important for defensive linemen and linebackers and how they want to make sure they play a gap because that's what they want to do. They want to clog up those gaps so that they don't give an opening for the offense to move. Now, all of a sudden, if you've got gaps that you didn't know were there before the snap, things can get crazy. David Shaw talked a bit about this in a 2013 coaching clinic. And David Shaw, of course, is the head coach at Stanford. And he is very much an advocate of the gap scheme. And he says, quote, "We are creating gaps. We are making the linebackers think, did I have the A gap? But wait, everyone has shifted over. Do I have the C gap now? We want the defense to communicate and talk about our formations. Then we shift and they have to rethink." So it's making the defense hesitate. Because you're basically saying, well, the gap that you thought you had is no longer the gap that you are now supposed to plug in. And that's all it is. It's just creating gaps by moving people around. And that's how you can identify it when you're watching it is with pullers.
Yeah, I mean, the pullers is the dead giveaway. There's, you know, every gap scheme, whether it's power or you have counter, you have, you know, wham, trap, like all of the gap schemes, you're going to have at least one guy that's pulling. And so that's kind of the dead giveaway there. Odds are very, very high that if you have a puller, that it's going to be a gap scheme. There's only a couple of exceptions really. And it's kind of, like some pin pull examples with zone, right? Where you technically get a puller in there, but they're still using more zone principles. So again, there are a few exceptions, but, the wide majority of the time, if you see somebody pulling, that's a gap scheme.
So a couple of examples, and 49ers fans who have watched and who still remember what it was like to win will know what the gap scheme looks like because this is what Jim Harbaugh brought to the 49ers. And of course, the preeminent example of the gap scheme is the power. And the power and the counter are really the most common gap scheme runs. And power is what the 49ers ran with excellence from 2011 all the way through the downfall through 2014. And so both plays are nearly identical in assignment. And the origin of the counter specifically, right, the power has been around forever. You, like we mentioned it earlier, you see that as early as 1905. But the counter is super interesting because Tom Osborne and another really awesome coaching name, and we're going to butcher it because that's what we do with names, Milt Tenaper. It's either that or Tenapir. I'm not sure. Nebraska fans can correct this. But Tom Osborne and Milt Tenaper, I'm going to go with Tenaper,
there you go.
Invented the counter sweep in the 1970s. defense is adjusted because that's what they do. They tinkered some more, and then in 1982, they came up with the counter that we now know and love. Joe Gibbs is sitting here watching some Nebraska film, and he's like, that looks pretty dope. I'm going to go ahead and swipe that.
I like that.
And yeah, I like that. I think we've got our call to action. Yeah, I like that. And he added a wrinkle. He basically said, you know what? What if we just swap the roles of the two pullers? And he called them the trapper and the rapper. What if we just switch them up? And when you add that switch, all of a sudden it allows you to be very effective with the way that you can run both power and counter. And then all of a sudden, boom, the Hogs are born. You win a couple Super Bowls. And then you think you can come out of retirement and win, even though you Dan Snyder's your owner.
So looking at those two pullers, and again, there are some differences when you look at some of the more modern like concepts there that only have a single puller that are run from more spread concepts and stuff like that. There are some differences, but traditionally you have again those two pullers, that the trapper and the wrapper, and really what those terms are mean. So the first puller is going to, and this is on power, right? So this is how it was for forever is power. The first puller is going to have the kick out block. That's the trapper, right? He's kind of taking the inside guy and he wants to kick him out and free up the lane inside of him. The second puller is the wrapper. Remember, all those guys on the play side of the offensive line are blocking down. Your wrapper's wrapping right around them and looking to climb up to the second level and pick off one of those linebackers. So that's what you have on power. And the only thing that changes on counter from a blocking standpoint is the roles of those two players. So they just swap. So basically, instead of the first guy getting the kickout block, he's climbing up to the linebacker. The second guy is now coming out and kicking that guy out on the end of the line of scrimmage there. So, you know, you have a little bit of a difference. The back is going to usually take kind of a counter step, right? He's going to fake one way, come back the other direction there. But from a blocking standpoint, everything's the same except for those two guys are just swapping roles, essentially.
If you want to get a really good example of what someone who runs gap scheme effectively looks like, and you want to cry yourself to sleep, go back and watch some 2011 through 2013 49ers. If you want to look at a modern example of what this scheme looks like, the Panthers and the Giants ran the highest percentage of gap scheme runs last season. Don't watch the Falcons, because they only ran 10% gap scheme plays last year. So the Niners are probably not going to be running a lot of gap schemes this year, because that's just not what Kyle Shanahan and his offense does. So then you've got the last of the running schemes, and this is going to be man. And this one might be a new one, because man schemes and gap schemes often get bunched together, and they often get they get presented as though they're the same and they're one thing, but they are different. So this is probably the OG of blocking when you think about football. It's a man on a man, and you've got a big line of people, and the person in front of you is the person that you're going to block. And that's how that's really all that it is. It's rugby, right? Dude in front of me is a dude I'm going to hit. And each offensive lineman is responsible for a specific person. They don't have zone rules. They're not trying to create additional gaps. There's no additional motion from a puller. There's no trapper. There's no wrapper. None of that. It's just the dude who's in front of me with, you know, a couple of different rules is the dude I'm going to hit. And I want to create some movement off the line of scrimmage.
Yeah. And that's the big thing, is the emphasis there really is there's no zone or gap rules, right? So they're not kind of working in unison like they are in zone and kind of stepping all the same direction and trying to create that movement there. They're not adding, removing gaps like you have on the gap scheme plays. It's really just its most basic man on a man. And the best way to identify this, again, comes back to similar with zone, is the first steps. Because if you're not really looking at that and paying close attention to it, it can be very easy to confuse a lot of man schemes with inside zone. Because, you know, the general movement of where they end up can end up being very similar. But you'll notice with the first step that you don't have everybody moving the same direction like you have on zone. There's going to be at least one guy on the play side that's stepping backside first. And usually you have a couple more as well. You have guys stepping in different directions, usually to create some double teams, you know, if possible. Not with every single man scheme, but I think one of the favorites that we'll talk about here in a moment is, again, still trying to create double teams, but you see guys stepping directly toward that blocker as opposed to, well, I'm first going to step play side and then we'll just kind of work to the blocker as we get it from there. So There's no pullers, though. You're not getting any of that type of movement with these blocks. It's really just man on man, and that's it. It's a pretty simple, straightforward scheme.
So let's talk a bit about some examples. There are two that I'll bring up before I'll let David wax philosophical about his favorite new running play, the duo. But the first example is a lead draw, and the Panthers run this quite a bit, especially with Cam Newton as the runner. This is exactly what it sounds like. It's going to be a lead where you've got someone leading the inside, usually on the inside, but everyone is just pretty much blocking the person in front of them. And Cam can then basically pick where he's going to run. I remember we saw one run when we were watching some film last night where he was at the goal line. He runs off to the left. He thinks he's got a touchdown and he gets smacked in the mouth. Or it was a 2-point conversion, I think is what it was.
Yeah.
But he basically gets the option to pick a hole and run based on where the offensive line has made some movement. And then you've got an ISO play, which is another old football play, but this is called ISO because you're isolating a fullback on a linebacker. Sometimes it's called a bob or a back on backer. That's a term you're going to hear also a little later when we get to the pass protection stuff. But this is another instance in where you basically are creating movement along the offensive line and you're isolating things such that that fullback can go head up on that linebacker and create an alley for the running back to run through. So there is no pulling. There is no creating additional gaps. In both of these instances, you've got an additional blocker leading through a hole, not creating a new gap. And then you've got something else, which is called a duo, and this is sometimes called power without a puller.
Yeah, power without a puller. I mean, you'll hear it again. This is one of those ones where the name of it don't take, take with a grain of salt, I guess, because you'll see it's duo, it's double, it's, I think I've seen it blast. Like there's a number of different names that you'll kind of see this go by, but this is the one that I think is really easy to confuse with inside zone because, it starts out very similarly. And again, one of the tenets of zone blocking, right, was we want to create double teams whenever possible. And that's kind of the foundation of this play as well. It's called duo because we're going to get at least two double teams out of this play. And the main difference, so again, you're looking at first steps is going to be the big key. But then the next thing is going to be where do those double teams work to when one of those guys moves off to the linebacker, right? So we talked about the combo blocks and we're going to get up to linebacker depth and we're going to wait for that linebacker to commit. And that's going to determine which offensive lineman picks him up, right? But the linebacker that they're going to key is different here. So on zone runs, they're really looking to work to a play side linebacker. So a linebacker that's kind of in front of them. Whereas on duo and in man schemes, they're working to the backside. So for the center, for instance, the center is almost always going to be involved in a double team on duo. And he's going to key the Will linebacker, that backside linebacker, as opposed to the Mike, the middle linebacker that he would do on inside zone. So you can see where those double teams work to as they move off on the linebacker. And that'll help you kind of differentiate between these two schemes. And it's something that I think if you have, you know, NFL Game Pass and you want to go look this stuff up, watch the Steelers. The Steelers use this a lot. It's excellent with Le'Veon Bell because he's such a patient runner, right? You see him like stop in the backfield sometimes and you're almost just like, what the hell? You're not supposed to be doing that. But it's really a perfect scheme for him because while like every run you have kind of an aiming point for the back, it can hit in a number of different spots and it really allows him to be patient, to set up blocks, and then to go where the defense isn't, essentially. So they run that quite a bit, and he runs it at a very, very high level.
And this is where, actually, Jeff Schwartz has a really good video on YouTube about this concept. There's also an article that we'll post in the write-up for the podcast on Niners Nation that goes over some of this as well. But this is where oftentimes people will say, oh, Le'Veon Bell's such a patient runner, he'd do really well in a gap scheme. And when you think of duo and the play that they run, it's more akin to a zone where Le'Veon can kind of pick where he wants to go because those principles are more the same. And while he does have an aiming target, his patience is what allows him to see holes develop and, you know, maybe cut back or do what he needs to. It's not quite the same as a gap scheme because you're not creating additional gaps simply by motioning people or creating extra ones. You're actually just using double teams to use blunt force trauma at the line and create some space. And then Le'Veon Bell sees that space and he runs through it.
And it's a lot of fun. Like it's a fun play to watch. It's a really, you know, it's just kind of a physical play. You're looking to get those double teams. You're trying to move guys off the spot. And I think it's a really, really effective play. Like you see teams use as the Cardinals. So that, you know, in division, we'll see this quite a bit. The Cardinals run this a lot as well. So yeah, it's something, again, very easy to confuse, but there are kind of some nuance there that will help you differentiate the two.
And if you're looking at to see how often the Niners might run this kind of scheme, and we looked at the Falcons last year, they ran man schemes 10.9% of the time, nearly 11. So if you think of what the schemes are that the 49ers will likely employ with Kyle Shanahan, you see zone scheme about 79-80% of the time, and you're going to see 10% gap and about 10 or 11% man. So it's going to be a heavy zone with a little bit of man and gap sprinkled in throughout the season. So let's switch gears and talk about pass protection. And the thing about pass protection that's interesting is if you know the general concepts of the kind of zone and man schemes for the run game, well, pass protection schemes are going to kind of mirror the same thing. And the first one is going to be an area pass protection scheme. And so, David, why the hell is an area scheme useful, and really, what are the benefits?
So with an area protection, this is really going to be, you know, it ends up being similar to kind of zone blocking in the run game, right? And I think this is helpful because it's probably the soundest type of protection, because as long as you have guys up front that, you know, can work together, that can communicate well, basically by saying that I'm going to, you know, just kind of block whatever comes in my direction and comes into my area, we can handle whatever the defense is throwing at us, right? Whether they're doing different stunts or different blitz packages and all of that, like moving all around like crazy. As long as the offensive line can communicate and work together to pass those things off, this should be the soundest protection plan that we can really put in there. And you're going to see it a lot, I think, in today's game, more so in kind of the rollout game. So you'll see everybody kind of slide one direction when the quarterback's rolling out. And you'll see it also on shorter passing concepts, because the ball is going to be coming out really quickly. We may decide that we don't need to block this guy on the backside because he's not going to be able to get there in time. So we just want to make sure that nothing gets through that's going to be in the quarterback's vision. Let him get the ball out quickly and be done with it. So I think that's kind of the basis there for, I think this, yeah, the starting point for pass protection is looking at those area schemes.
Yeah, I think the easiest way to, and where it clicked for me when I was watching this, was watch a bootleg pass from Atlanta. When you see the entire offensive line move in one direction as though it's going to be a zone run, that's a slide protection. That's an area scheme. Now, there are a couple of problems with area schemes, and that is that because you are basically saying you've got an area, the defense can then exploit that with some terrible matchups. So let's say that you slide your entire offensive line one direction, and your running back then ends up having to pick up a defensive line on the opposite side. That's a mismatch. Defensive line should, the defense should win that matchup. And so if you're just going to trust that, you know, everything's going to line up, well, all of a sudden the defense can take advantage. It can also make it difficult for skill players to get into the route. If you've got a tight end or a running back who's got to stay in the block because a defender enters their area, all of a sudden your route concept might get messed up. All of a sudden your timing might get messed up if they're going to chip stuff. And so it's really going to be problematic because the quarterback isn't going to have all of the things that they thought they would have. And because your route combinations might get messed up, you're not going to be stressing defenses and forcing defenders in conflict like the play was designed to do. So while it might be something that is protection first, it is going to have some problems, especially in an NFL where you can see some serious mismatches, especially on running backs or tight ends named Garrett Salick.
Yeah, don't look to the Niners for good examples of any of the pass protection stuff. But yeah, I think with area schemes as well, one of the things that can kind of suck is that you end up in situations where that running back or, you know, that tight end that could maybe get out in the route does stay in to block because of, you know, the defender entering his area. But then you look, because it may not be a blitz or anything like that, you know, they may not only still be sending four guys, and all of a sudden you have two guys on the interior of your offensive line just kind of standing around and not blocking anybody. And so it seems like a waste, right? Why am I having somebody that can be going out and catching a pass staying in the block when I could have had an offensive lineman pick that guy up? So that's kind of the downside of it. And when you switch over to man schemes, that's really the main point of it is it's trying to eliminate those problems, right? So rather than I'm just going to take whoever comes into my area, we're going to go up to the line of scrimmage. We're going to identify who's got who, right? And it uses that kind of, and this was something that you mentioned when we were talking about ISO, which is that Bob approach, right? It's big on big, back on backer. And so I'm going to have my offensive linemen pick up the defensive linemen that are more likely to rush anyway, right? So I don't end up with mismatches as often where I have to have a much smaller running back take on their best pass rusher or you know, some big 285-pound defensive end where he's just going to get demolished. So I can kind of eliminate those, make sure that my running backs are going to be focused on the linebackers that might be blitzing. And then when they don't, my backs can get out into the route, right? They can release and get out on there because we know that linebackers are less likely to rush the passer. So that's really the point of man schemes is to eliminate some of those problems that you do come across with area screams and some of those conflicts.
And usually we watched a lot of Oakland film when we were putting together the agenda for this show, and Oakland in the game that we watched ran a lot of five-man protections. And that is one of the giveaways that you're looking at a man scheme, because there's five people in to protect and you've basically got people that you've got to cover. You've got people that you need to block in order to make sure that your quarterback has enough time to throw the ball. So sometimes formations can tip whether or not it's a man scheme, not always, but sometimes. And even in instances in which you are leveraging a man scheme for protection, it's never really going to be an absolute man kind of protection. You're not going to see a left guard run all the way to the right side of the field if his dude stunts. You're still going to see them pass off and make sure that they stay within a general area. But the basic principle is the same, which is I'm responsible for a dude and I got to make sure that I block that dude.
Yeah. Or that he gets blocked by someone else. Right. And I think like the most common thing is, usually you're going to see like the guard and tackle to one side, right? Or they're still going to pass off. If you see, if you remember back the T stunt that the 49ers ran a ton of when Justin and Alden Smith were on one side of the defense, right? Where you have essentially the inside guy, the defensive tackle going outside and then the end guy looping around to the inside of him. Those type of stunts, you still want to be able to pass off within your general area, but it's not as much of a everybody moving one direction, and it's not as much of that zone blocking type of setup. It's I got this guy and I'm going to make sure that he gets blocked. And I think when you transition, the last kind of major bucket that we have is a combo protection, right? It's a combination of those two things. And I think this is by far the most common pass protection that you're going to see in the NFL. And that's really we're going to area block to one side of the offensive line, and then we're going to man block to the opposite side. And the reason that we do that is we're going to man block to the side that the running back's on, right? So that way we don't have to deal with some of those problems where the back's stuck in when he doesn't need to be, or where the back gets matched up with a defensive lineman that he has no hope of blocking. We can man block to that side, make sure that he picks up the linebacker if he comes, and then if not, he can release out, and then we'll area block to the other side, make sure we have good protection there and make sure we can handle any sort of stunts or blitzes that they're going to that side of the line. And you sort of get this, I think, best of both worlds scenario here. So this is the one, this sort of six-man protection with the back potentially releasing out late is going to be the most common type of protection that you're going to see in the NFL.
So if you're sitting at home and you're a couple beers in and you want to impress your friends and you want to identify what this protection looks like, you're going to look for a half slide. And a half slide is where one side of the offensive line will slide one direction. So the last three times you've said one direction, and now I'm thinking about it too. I'm thinking of the damn boy band for whatever reason. I think it's because I'm going to go see, so this is a huge digression. I want to go see Dunkirk in a couple of weeks. And, one of the dudes from One Direction's in that movie, and I really want to see him get blowed up.
What did you just call me? I don't even know what that is.
Dunkirk. It's the new Christopher Nolan movie. Oh my! I'll send you the trailer later. Okay. It looks pretty dope. But you're looking for a half slide. So half of the offensive line will slide to one direction and look like they are going to be zone blocking to that side, but the other side of the offensive line is not going to slide with them. They're either going to stay in place or, it seems like, sometimes move to the opposite direction even and pick up the guys that are going to be over there. And so when you see some kind of like almost like a fissure in the middle of the line for whatever reason, that's usually a half slide, sliding one way or the other. And that's how you can tell that it is a combo protection. You're getting the best of both worlds.
Yeah, and I think the key part, too, that will really, and this, again, isn't true 100% of the time, but if the slide is happening away from the running back, you can almost guarantee that it's combo protection. Like, because that's really the key part, is we want to free up that running back to either be able to get out into the route or block somebody that he can reasonably handle in pass protection and not get stuck on somebody that's just going to demolish him in the backfield.
So if that's going to be the kind of the high level of what we're going to cover, and when you think about running game and you think about the zone scheme, which is going to be the primary scheme the 49ers will run with Kyle Shanahan, gap scheme and man scheme, which we will not run a whole hell of a lot, but we will run. Anything of pass protection schemes and what it is that they ask you to do. If the area scheme is a bit like the zone scheme, and then you think the man scheme is a bit like, you know, kind of the man running scheme, and then, you know, you've got the combo, which is a bit of both. What does that mean for the 49ers when they're transitioning to this new offensive system here for the offensive line specifically? And I think the first question that comes to mind for me is really how much better the 49ers can get on the outside zone. Because last year, the 49ers did not run the outside zone very well. There's someone who works for Pro Football Focus, and it's another all name. Just his name is Zoltan. Zoltan Boudet.
Zoltan. I want to say Zoltan. I don't think that's accurate, but it sounds cooler in my mind.
No, because that's not an American name. So like it'd be Sultan or something like that. It wouldn't be Zoltan. That's like definitely
he's from Hungary.
Americanizing.
He's awesome. He does a lot of good work, especially in the run game.
And he tweeted out some stuff a couple of weeks ago about about how effective the 49ers were on certain run concepts. And the 49ers were one of only five teams that averaged negative yards before contact on outside runs, on outside zone runs in 2016.
Yep.
I mean, that's terrible. That's awful. That's the other teams, incidentally. Carolina runs primarily gap schemes. Oakland, San Diego, and the New York Football Giants. Those are the teams
also
that,
heavy,
that
heavy
were,
gap. Yeah. I mean, a lot of heavy gap in there. San Diego, I don't remember off the top of my head too much, but definitely Oakland, Carolina, and the Giants. Heavy, heavy gap in man.
Yeah, exactly. So this was a team that wasn't new to zone, but was definitely new to outside zone, and they just did not run it very well. You look, though, at the Atlanta Falcons, and they averaged 5.02 yards per carry and 2.2 yards before contact. That ranked them third in the league and over a full yard above NFL average when it comes to yards before contact. So I definitely am not suggesting that the Niners are going to flip and be that good next year, but there is a hell of a gap to close for them to be competent in the primary run scheme that Shanahan is going to want to run.
Yeah, I am not overly positive about their ability to make that transition. I think this is really one of the most concerning things because I think you have some guys, and by some guys, I mean some non-Joe Staley offensive linemen. And actually, I keep forgetting about Zutaw. Zutaw comes from, you know, of course, Baltimore, and they were a heavy zone team, a heavy outside zone team. You know, so I feel pretty good about his ability to get in there and do well. But I think the right side of the line, at least the right side of the line as it was last year, is really the big concern because you have Josh Garnett over there, you have Trent Brown, and these are some big guys that really are more ideally suited for your gap and for your man schemes because they're maulers. I mean, they're guys that can, if they get their hands on you, can create a lot of movement, but they're not as good at blocking guys on the move, essentially. Like Garnett, I think, has some good athleticism to him, but it's not very functional when you see him get out there. He can't really adjust on the move all that well. He has terrible, terrible problems with balance. He ends up on the ground way too much, and you see him struggle to get some of those cutoff blocks, you know, on the backside there, which are really, really key in outside zone. So I think there's just a lot of question marks about how some of these guys are going to be able to transition to doing this type of scheme more heavily. Because last year, even when they ran outside zone, it wasn't a lot. But they made a number of adjustments to what you would typically see from that to make those jobs for those two players in particular, I think, a little bit easier, and it still didn't work all that well.
And you might be thinking to yourself, but the 49ers were ranked pretty highly when it came to their rushing offense. And when you think of their inside zone prowess, they seem to do pretty well with that. And sure enough, they were first in the league in inside zone runs, and they were 11th in yards per carry. But most of that was after contact. They were third in the league in yards after contact on inside zone plays, which basically means that the only reason we were any good on inside zones was because we had a damn good running back in Carlos Hyde that was able to mask and make up for a lot of the offensive line problems. And on top of that, a good chunk of the total gross yardage that you see was quarterback runs. It was Colin Kaepernick running around and being crazy and being a big part of the offense. And that gets lumped into the general rushing yards as well. If you remove quarterback run yard rushing yardage overall, the overall yardage drops us down quite a bit. So this is going to be one of the key sticking points, especially when you think about the interior of the offensive line. So for Atlanta, Alex Mack pretty much transformed the line and what they could do in Atlanta. There are a couple of great write-ups on the old internets about the importance of Alex Mack to the Shanahan zone running scheme, and this is one of the reasons why Shanahan went out and got Alex Mack from Cleveland. And so it's no surprise that the team went out and got some interior linemen to help compete. We already mentioned Jeremy Zutaw, but there's a couple of other people that we've picked up as well, Tim Barnes and Brandon Fusco, who has experience at both guard and center. So the other question, I think, for the transition point, David, is do you think Kilgore stays at center? Or do you think that Kilgore is someone that may be better suited for guard because someone like Zutaw, who has experience at center, comes from an outside zone scheme, is going to be able to make some of the reach blocks that you need in order to make the outside zone go?
Yeah, I think that's one of the toughest questions, and I don't have a solid answer that I feel really confident in, because I think Zutaw is probably the better option at center, right? But I think Kilgore is also probably one of the five best offensive linemen that they have on the roster. And we know that he has played guard before, but I don't know that we've seen him play a lot of it so far in this offseason, right? I don't know of how willing they are to maybe move him there or consider him there. So that's kind of where I kind of run into that block. But to me, I think Zutaw is probably your best option. Again, I think he's a better player just kind of generally. But I also think he has more experience in this type of scheme and is really a better fit for that outside zone run. So I don't know. I guess I would be most surprised if Kilgore ends up starting at center. But I don't know if they're willing to move him to guard and put somebody like Zane Beatles or, you know, Josh Garnett on the bench.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if Beatles ends up. Honestly, it wouldn't surprise me if Beatles ended up cut in the first round of cuts.
I mean, he's just not good. He was so bad last year.
No, but we did establish he's very good at tapping the center's leg to identify that the ball needs to be snapped. And you know what, David? Somebody's got to do it.
Irreplaceable.
Somebody has got to do it. He's like a plumber, right? It's not sexy. It's not a sexy job. And there may be some crack involved, but someone's got to do it. So I don't think Beatles is fit for the roster just based on some of the talent that we've added both in free agency and even some of, you know, kind of the undrafted stuff. I'd say, you know what, give one of these guys a chance. What the hell you got to lose? It's not like we're going to win a lot of games. But the other question, and you've kind of already touched on it a little bit, is Garnett. One of the things that he supposedly did well when he was coming out of college at Stanford was his ability to pull and his ability to move and block in space. And yet you don't see that translating to the zone blocking scheme very well.
No, because I don't think, I think that not all blocks on the move are the same, right? They're not the same type of things that you're asking guys to do. And I think just because he can move well and quickly in a straight line doesn't mean that he has the sort of functional athleticism that you need, to be able to kind of adjust. You know, what happens if you're going, you know, because a lot of times, so on the backside, and this is really where I think a really big problem is for him. So on the backside of outside zone, your guard and your tackle on that side are having to bust ass to basically get across and cut off kind of those backside defenders, essentially. Usually going to be aligned quite a bit inside, and it's a tough block. You know, it's not something that's easy to do. And then all of a sudden, if that guy moves off the spot, right? So maybe he has trouble getting there to begin with, but all of a sudden that guy makes a movement and cuts hard upfield behind him. Like, that's where he really kind of struggles, is that change of direction and ability to keep his balance and stick on some of those blocks. And he, again, ends up on the ground a ton because of that. And you see it not only in the run game, but you see it in pass protection as well. And this is kind of... It played out as sort of the worst case with him last season, because we talked about after the draft that, like, yeah, there's some exciting things with him. You can obviously see some talent there. He seems like a very, very smart guy and, you know, picks things up really quickly. But there are some problems, and you saw it at Stanford where the balance isn't there, the pass protection isn't there. And those can cause some really, I mean, to me, balance and hand usage are probably the two single most important things for offensive linemen. And he really struggles with that balance part of it. So, I'm not convinced that he's going to be able to find a good place in this offense and be able to kind of live up to that first round billing. I think he's just kind of a much better fit for, you know, a more of a gap or man scheme where he can take a guy in front of him and move him off the spot, because that's something that I think he's a lot better at.
So talking about pass blocking then, when we look at the current crop of offensive linemen, the pass blocking numbers are not very good. When you look at offensive linemen that have at least 250 pass blocking snaps, and you look at the current crop, you've got Trent Brown, who was ranked 30th out of 66 tackles based on Pro Football Focus's ratings. You've got, this is just for pass blocking specifically, you've got Joe Staley, who actually rated out a little worse. He was 42nd out of 66. You've got Daniel Kilgore, who was 32nd out of 35th for centers. Beatles, who was 67th out of 70 for guards. And Garnett, his buddy, 68th out of 70 for guards. That's really, really bad. That is not good.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about three of the starters, Kilgore, Beatles, and Garnett, being in the bottom like 10%, and in a couple cases being like, I don't know, a Jordan Devey away from being the last person ranked in terms of pass blocking efficiency. And so, you know, what is it that, I don't even know what the question is. It's just like, ugh.
I mean,
like
with the offense, so every time that I feel myself maybe getting a little bit of excitement about this season, right, and trying to, like, oh man, maybe they could get, you know, like 7-8 wins. Shit, maybe they could even start to push for something bigger. I think about the offensive line, and I just went back and, you know, very recently had to watch all of the pass blocking snaps from last season. And that's kind of the jar back to reality, is that this offensive line is very bad. You know, it's basically Joe Staley. You know, Trent Brown, I think, is much better as a pass protector than he is a run blocker at this point. And that's it. Like, I don't feel great about any of the other guys. I mean, Zuta, I think, will be better, but guard is a major, major problem right now. And
well, you think of the new guys too, and the new guys, they do provide some relief, but not a ton. You've got Jeremy Zuta. He ranks 27th out of 35 centers in pass protection. Tim Barnes, 33rd out of 35. And Brandon Fusco, he rates out at guard. He is 58th out of 70. So Brandon Fusco is a little better than Beatles and Garnett when it comes to pass protection. Zuta's a little better than Kilgore when it comes to pass protection. But it's not like we got these, you know, it's not like we got an Osemele or something like that to shore up a guard spot.
Yeah.
It's definitely, even if you do see a change over to Zuta or Barnes or Fusco, it's still going to be a marginal improvement, which, I mean, I guess is something, but it's not going to be, you know, world altering or offensive line altering kind of stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And Zuta, I think, is a general improvement over Kilgore, but yeah, he's a better run blocker than a pass protector, I think, at this point. And it's kind of rough. I mean, they're going to do some things to help these guys out, but the problem is they did a lot of things to help them out last year, because you think of, you know, this year, and again, the play action stuff that we've talked a lot about, and, you know, the kind of that big boot action that makes life easier for your offensive line. You know, you don't see pressure on those type of plays very often. And they're going to do some.
Jeff Schwartz, he had a really good article where he talked about how an offensive scheme can help your offensive line.
Yeah.
And he talked a lot about how, you know, boot action and play action, you know, anything to make a rusher think or stop their feet gives the offensive line a second to recover, to gain an advantage or to do something. So Kyle Shanahan's scheme is very offensive line friendly. But even then, I mean, you're still working with, you know, you're still working with this crop of offensive linemen.
But even last year, so I mean, it looks different, but last year they did a lot of those things as well. So if you think of, you know, RPOs, which the 49ers ran, they were among the league leaders.
It's run pass options.
In the number of run pass options run last year. And those are, I mean, your offensive line is literally run blocking. They're not having to pass protect. And the odds of the odds of pressure on those plays is non-existent. They did.
You don't even have to pass block. Just run block. You know, just run block. Still not going to work.
So you have that. I mean, you have a number of kind of quick hitting pass concepts that allow your offensive linemen to again be a little bit more aggressive rather than setting back. They can kind of attack a little bit more right at the beginning of their pass set and kind of short set them a little bit. And that makes life easier when the ball is coming out quickly. So there were a number of things last year that they did as well to try to help offensive line play. But there gets a point, you know, where you're not a good team and you're down in the second half and you just have to drop back and throw. And that's where they're going to have a lot of big problems because, you know, again, I think tackles are solid. Like you can feel pretty good about Joe Staley, obviously still, and I think Trent Brown is pretty solid in that area, and I think he can still certainly improve. But that interior is a problem, and when you have guys in the division like Aaron Donald, you know that like that's a major problem that you're going to have to figure out. So. I think ultimately the offensive line is going to be the part that holds this offense back the most and makes it really tough for them to be to make big leaps in production offensively.
And it's on that super optimistic note that we round out the episode. That is the episode 3 of Scheme Month. Hopefully you don't do anything drastic based on that evaluation. But yeah, hopefully you learned a little bit. You're able to identify some different run schemes, some pass schemes. We will have some pictures and some images up on the article that's up on Niners Nation, because I know sometimes it's difficult to imagine this stuff, and sometimes you just want a reference because it helps. So definitely check out the Niners Nation article because it will have some additional resources. I'm working on, the whole Niners Nation staff is working on a composite ranking for all 90 players on the team. We did something similar last year, so look for that in about a week. And yeah, in the meantime, if you're bored, leave us a review on iTunes or on Google Play, but only if it's good. If it's not,
only 5-star. Then, we're about that 5-star life, okay?
Yeah, like, all about that 5-star.
You can just forget about it if it's not a 5-star.
Exactly. Just don't even do it. And that about does it. I think we settled on a call to action this week. It's what was it? Oh, it was yeah. I like that.
I like that.
I like that. But it's that with a D. That's it's right. I like that. DAT.
Yeah.
All right. That's fair.
I'm into
that's
it. Right.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Well. Yeah. I think that about does it. We'll be back next week with the final Scheme Month episode, because then after that, it's like almost real football. Like July is over.
It's July.
And then it's August.
I think we got maybe one more break in there at the beginning of August when I'm going to be moving. But I mean, we're pretty much in it.
Oh yeah, that's right. David's coming back to Austin, Texas. We will be able to pod in the same room again, and it will be amazing. I'll get to look at his flowing soccer player locks IRL.
Yeah, I moved to Pittsburgh and didn't cut my hair like the entire time, so that'll be interesting.
Basically. But yeah, so thanks again for tuning in, and as always, go Niners.
Hi, I'm Karis Fisher. I want to tell you about another podcast you should check out. It's called Recode Decode. Every week, I talk to tech and media's key players about how they're changing our world. I interview tech executives like Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg, political figures like Hillary Clinton, and media personalities like John Carreyrou, who literally wrote the book on Theranos. Once again, the name of the show is Recode Decode, hosted by me, Kara Swisher. You can find it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to the show. See you there.